This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The number of COVID deaths in the U.S. topped 600,000, and most of the victims were seniors. But throughout the pandemic, another health crisis emerged. Deaths related to Alzheimer's and dementia also went up significantly. I spoke to a local doctor and researcher about why, and here is our recorded interview. Joining us now is Dr. Rana Schatz, a faculty member in the Department of Neurology and Rehabilitative Medicine at the University of Cincinnati, as well as a UC health physician. Dr. Schatz, thank you so much for taking some time with us.
You are welcome. I'm really glad to be here.
So I read that according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that there were at least 42,000 more deaths from Alzheimer's and other dementias over the past year in 2020 when compared to the previous 5 years average. Is there a relationship between that spike and the pandemic?
Absolutely. It really was a double hit because people with Alzheimer's disease are at a much greater risk for severe disease and death from COVID. And that's independent of the older age and medical complications that accompany old age. It's the Alzheimer's itself and all of our public health interventions like the physical distancing or lockdown are counter to the type of interventions that we know help to sustain function and quality of life. So this was definitely a key factor.
So for people who specialize in this type of research and in this type of care for the senior population most vulnerable to Alzheimer's and dementia, what has the reaction been?
I think we have all been very aware going into this that we were going to be facing challenges. And like everybody, dealing with a pandemic is a once in a generation issue. And we're in a different place than in any previous pandemics in that we have many more people surviving into older age who then are developing these diseases that occur with older age. So as we've gone along, we have learned things. We have learned that the methods to keep people safe from infection have to be altered going forward so that we aren't actually creating a situation where we're fostering the death from the disease.
This same CDC report, just as you kind of touched on, it said that by 2050, the number of people 65 and older living with Alzheimer's here in America will jump from 6.2 million to 12.7 million. I'm going to be in that age group by the time that year rolls around. I mean, when folks see a statistic like that and know that they might be in that target demo for this terrible illness, what should we be doing?
I think this speaks to the concepts we have now that Alzheimer's disease and other dementias have factors that have preventive factors that we can implement and should implement at this point in life, in mid-age, and maybe even sooner. What we're learning is Alzheimer's is sort of an accumulation of hits to our brain over a lifetime. Some of this is predisposition that we can't change, how we are born. Very early life experiences that might give us protection through what we call cognitive reserve. This is the excess number of connections that we create in our brain that allow us when we're under stress, whether it's an infection like COVID or it's blood pressure and diabetes that alter brain networks. This allows us to have some redundancy so that we can continue functioning. There is also an importance to pay attention to sleep as a major issue. We now look at sleep as a function for the brain. not the body. It's not about getting a rest during the day, but it's allowing the brain to be kind of offline, able to process things and lay down information so it's effective and accessible to us. So we also know that sleep has a purpose in clearing toxins from the brain. And this is a factor that if we don't address, means that over a lifetime, we accumulate more toxins than our brain can handle. And that will jumpstart the Alzheimer's process.
We're talking with Dr. Rana Schatz, a faculty member in the Department of Neurology and Rehabilitative Medicine at the University of Cincinnati. She is also a UC health physician. So just to build upon that remark about sleep and its importance and its relationship to mental health later on, dementia and Alzheimer's, I understand that there is some research that show that if you're getting less than, say, 7 hours of sleep a night, that does place you at a higher risk?
Right. It, either too little or too much.
Too much.
Yes. So this is because beyond that 7 to 8 hour window, the sleep quality changes, the type of sleep that you have, and it will influence the progression through sleep stages the next night so that you are going to be in lighter stages of sleep and never reach the one in particular that I was talking about where this exiting and discharge of toxins occurs.
I know that you are, you know, you work in a university setting and in a large healthcare operation and not at a nursing home, but we know that a lot of people who are battling dementia and Alzheimer's might find themselves in a long-term senior care facility. And we also know that during the pandemic, these places were so hard hit and we lost a lot of people of that age group, particularly in those environments. Do you think we learned anything about senior care as it relates to those types of facilities and Alzheimer's during the pandemic?
Absolutely. We talk a lot to our patients about the importance of what we call behavioral interventions or lifestyle interventions. And one of these is the importance of socialization, interaction. We humans are hardwired to be social animals and gather. This is what our brains respond to. And along with physical activity and the exposure to things that are new and different on a regular basis, these are the drivers of how our brain creates new memory and facilitates connectivity from a network standpoint. This social isolation just was exactly opposite to what our brains need. And it was probably by itself responsible for so much of the decline that we saw in people who were in these residential settings. But I will say to you, it's not just the residential settings in the community, because our older patient population were rightfully fearful of being out. They were just as isolated, and this was just as harmful to them.
We talked earlier about the likely increase in the number of Alzheimer's patients and people dealing with dementia by the year 2050, basically doubling from what we see now by the year 2050. What do we think the role is of the pandemic in that? Because, I mean, think of a 30-year-old or a 40-year-old or a 50-year-old right now. It was pretty mentally stressful over the past year for just about everyone. Are there going to be long-term effects for people who might have been feeling that type of mental anguish, maybe sleep deprivation or too much sleep for the first time in their lives?
I think when we're younger, we have mitigation strategies that we can implement. But I do believe that there are potential COVID-related factors that might increase risk for Alzheimer's later, We know about a third of the individuals that had the COVID-19 infection had neurological consequences. Not all of these were brain-related. Some were muscle-related. And we don't have the data yet to know if this early infection will somehow lower the threshold or accelerate some of the inflammatory processes that we know also lead to Alzheimer's disease. And there's a lot of overlap in terms of inflammation that occurs as a result of an infection and inflammation that drives the pathology that causes Alzheimer's disease.
We're talking with Dr. Rana Schatz, a faculty member in the Department of Neurology and Rehabilitative Medicine at the University of Cincinnati, also a UC Health physician. I understand that UC Health will be one of three sites across the state of Ohio to provide this new Alzheimer's treatment. It's a drug that is called aducanumab, and I guess it will be marketed perhaps or also known as Aduhelm. This is something that will be used to treat Alzheimer's, but it's not without controversy. And before we talk about what UC Health will be looking for as it provides this new treatment, could you help us understand why it's controversial?
Yes. It's controversial on several levels. One is the premise that removing amyloid from the brain is this most significant thing we can do to treat Alzheimer's disease. And there's certainly evidence that amyloid protein, the protein that's removed by aducanumab, is related to the processes that ultimately cause the death of nerve cells. But it's not clear that removing it en masse is helpful. There appear to be different forms of amyloid that cause damage. And this drug has somewhat of a wide effect across multiple species of this amyloid, multiple configurations. And we know that just removing amyloid from plaques doesn't do good and might actually do harm. It does have an effect on one particular form of this amyloid protein called oligomers. But it's not a strong oligomer removal. So we don't know yet because this drug study had two parts to it. One started a little bit before the other. And based on what they call a futility analysis, kind of judging from how people were doing in the midpoint of the study to determine if they're going to reach a significant endpoint, they felt they weren't going to do that. So they stopped both studies, the one that started a little later and the one that started earlier. Afterwards, when they analyzed the data, they identified in the second study a group of people who had exposure to the highest dose of aducanumab. And this group did better on cognitive testing, and there were signs that the death of nerve cells, neurodegeneration, the formation of tau protein, which is a marker of neurodegeneration, was reduced. However, they violated a lot of the safeguards in studies to make sure that we weren't seeing something that still could happen by chance. The numbers of people were small. And based on chance alone, this may have happened in this group or for factors that weren't maybe related to drug. So the approval based on this post hoc data is really uncomfortable.
We've seen, I guess, similar reaction to the COVID-19 vaccines. I'm thinking of Johnson & Johnson, for example, or AstraZeneca overseas, where you hear some very small examples and then there's widespread panic. Is that somewhat similar?
A little different. This isn't side effect from a vaccine. It's not side effect from a medication. It's really uncertainty about its benefit. Side effects also in this study were not trivial. About 30% of people in this group that were exposed to the high dose had some changes on their brain, either swelling or some microhemorrhage. And to say that most of the people had these 98%, these resolved, and there didn't appear to be consequences, I will say that. But this was a very carefully chosen group.
I just want to note, I've got less than a minute here. Sure. With you, Dr. Schatz. I know we'll probably have you back to talk more about this as it moves forward. In the last 50 or so seconds we have, what will you all be looking for at UC Health as you administer this intravenous drug?
We are going to be looking at how people are responding in a much more granular way, looking at their cognition and neurodegeneration markers carefully. And making sure that we're keeping people safe, but also informing them of how they're doing with this drug.
Dr. Rana Schatz is a faculty member in the Department of Neurology and Rehabilitative Medicine at the University of Cincinnati, also a UC Health physician. Dr. Schatz, thank you so much for explaining the situation to us, as well as the information on that newly approved drug and the work that UC will be doing on it. We really value the time you gave us.
Thank you so much. Really glad to be here.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstrow. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.